Take your ADHD business to the next level with Chad's Parent-to-Parent Family Training on ADHD, a certification program. Help parents in your community discover new techniques and how to manage ADHD across the lifespan. We've done the hard work for you. When you become a licensed partner, you'll receive ongoing customer and marketing support from Chad, course materials, training manuals, and much more. Help improve the lives of those with ADHD while growing your business. Become a licensed partner today. Visit Chad.org for more info. Click, join, get involved.
This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
All right, everybody. Good evening and welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and Attention Coach Jeff Copper. We've got a great show for you tonight. The topic is ADHD treatment gone right, coaching and psychology. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. David Teplin. He's an adult clinical psychologist that we've had onto the show before, but it's been way too long, so we're glad to have him back again. Tonight is June the 1st in the year 2016 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Some announcements real quick. It's time to start planning for the 2016 annual International CHAD Conference. This year it's going to be in Mesa, California, November the 10th through the 12th. To learn more about that, go to chadd.org. Also want to continue to promote ADHDfund.com, which is a crowdsourcing website to raise money for small scale research worldwide. So with that, let's get into the meat of the show. Tonight we have Dr. David Teplin. Again, he's an adult clinical psychologist in Richmond Hill, Ontario, and is on the adjunct faculty at Medai College Doctor of Clinical Psychology Program in Buffalo, New York. He's obtained his doctorate in clinical psychology from Alder University in Chicago. His primary area of clinical practice are clinical assessments, clinical consultations, adult ADHD, and alcohol and drug problems. His professional memberships include the Canadian Psychological Association, the College of Psychologists of Ontario, and the World Federation of ADHD. He's a diplomat in chemical dependency counseling. He's on the Canadian Center for ADHD Awareness Advisory Board and is the co-chair of the Adult Attention Deficit Disorder Association. You can get more information on him by going to his website at David Teplin. That's DrDavidTeplin.com. With that, David, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Jeff.
Excited about this. This is going to be a fun show, I think, because really kind of wanted to highlight ADHD coaching is we're becoming known, and we're working more and more with professionals and psychologists like you. And it's been a blast for those who acknowledge ADHD coaches. And I think some of the outcomes that we've been getting in working together with other mental health professionals have been very, very, very beneficial for those that we work with. And I want to begin by just saying, can you just describe what your experience is working with other professionals, not just ADHD, as a part of a treatment team?
Yeah, so by and large, my experience has been very positive. It also depends on the nature of the person's clinical presentation and what might be going on with them, whether it's ADHD or other things, or ADHD mm-hmm. along with other things. But by and large, I find the treatment team approach very helpful, and oftentimes patients really like it as well because there are a number of hands involved in the treatment. As long as those involved in the treatment are communicating and, of course, with the patient's written permission to do so. But most of the time, it works pretty well.
And, you said an important word there, and that is communicating, because that is the key. And communicating is not necessarily over the top. I know you and I have worked together a little bit with some people, and the communications are sometimes just as simple as an email here or there, or a 5-minute phone call, as opposed to really not talking at all. And I've worked with other mental health professionals in such situations, and it's not like we need to be on the phone for like hours and hours on end. Usually it's relatively short, but that communication really is the key, if from my perspective.
Yeah, no, definitely is the key for sure, and most folks are pretty open to it. I mean, I think there are two things to bear in mind when one's considering a treatment team. One is everybody's busy, and so in some ways we have to keep it relatively short.
Yep.
And then the other thing is that, by and large, people are also very aware and respectful, mind you, that everybody's kind of working in some ways, although together, in their own territory. So, you know, a psychiatrist is not a psychologist. A psychologist is not necessarily a therapist, and a therapist isn't necessarily a coach. But everybody also understands their role and their kind of, you know, place in that what we call circle of treatment.
That's a really, really important point. And I just want to just kind of talk about that from my perspective. As a coach, my role is not to be a therapist. It's really to coach. But one of my roles, too, is to help those that I work with better articulate their experiences and or kind of help identify things that just like something's presenting in you that's not quite what I've seen before. Help them language it, if you will, and go in and talk to somebody like yourself so that I can kind of help them to a certain extent. It's coach them to talk to you about what they're experiencing so that you can be more accurate and in the time that you spend and kind of get there. You want to just speak about that for a second when somebody can walk in and they're a little bit more articulate on maybe something that's happening?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in my experiences in working with you, I can think of different cases where that was extremely helpful to me because as well, you know, I'm not seeing the person necessarily on a continual basis.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but you may be having certain discussions with him or her that I'm not having and vice versa. So those instances have been very helpful so that you're right. Even though you aren't necessarily coaching per se, what you are coaching is for them to articulate and bring it in so that can be further teased out, whether it's an actual psychotherapeutic issue, is it a tweaking of medication issue, are there other kinds of services or settings that might be required as well. I've always appreciated in working with you is that you're always very clear with both me and with the folks that we work with collectively as to what you can and can't do, what you will and won't do, and that's always been very helpful as well.
So that's interesting because I want to give an example, and this is not somebody you and I had worked with, but something that kind of comes up, and maybe see if I can delineate a little bit about therapy and kind of coaching a little bit. I was working with an individual over a period of time, and we were dealing in some space. The person had ADHD, and the topic of shame came up. And I said, you know, there's a therapeutic kind of side of that that's a really mental health professional. Maybe to deal with it, my job is to kind of help get around. And the person was kind of like, really? You can coach in the space of shame? I said, well, it's not therapy, but I'll just jump to the outcome. This particular individual had ADD, and a lot of times they would go up to people and they would ask them a question like, how would you go about buying, I don't know, a computer? And often the person would tell them, I would go do this, 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 and this. And in this situation, that person that I was dealing with would feel shameful because they didn't necessarily go and do it the way that person did it. And as I began to work with them a little bit, I said, well, what would it be like if you didn't ask them how to buy it? What if you asked them to share their experience when they bought one? And the idea there is that they would explain it to them, but they're not telling you. Thereby, you don't – because if you ask for somebody's opinion, they give it to you. There's a certain amount of you need to do it. But if they just share their experiences, you can kind of take it or leave it. And in that environment, we were trying to create it so she wouldn't ask the question, so she wouldn't feel shameful, to kind of get around it. Well, that was the coaching side. Now, there were some other areas that she felt some shame that I really didn't feel like I could kind of handle, in which case I would refer to a mental health professional. So, Dr. Teflon, you want to share your thoughts on what I've just described?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's fair game what you've said. I mean, from a clinical perspective, when it comes to ADHD, shame may just be about feeling misunderstood, you know, issues around not being able to do things as easily as other people, or not quite understanding, or the whole issue of coulda, woulda, shoulda, broken promises, broken commitments. On the other hand, shame can also be a part of depression. It can be a part of anxiety. It can be part of addiction and recovery. It can be part of PTSD and trauma. It can be part of a person's personality characteristics and the traits that they exhibit, which are oftentimes or can be shame-based. So what you're saying to me makes total sense. And again, you've highlighted the difference between what you can and can't, will and won't do with
yep.
respect
yep.
to that. Because let's face it, whether a person, if they have ADHD, whether they do or they don't have other conditions going on, sometimes it's really about ADHD. And conversely, even if a person has ADHD, sometimes it's about other things that have got nothing to do with ADHD.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Tell you what, I want to go to a break real quick and then come back and kind of pick up on this discussion. For those out there that want to learn more about Dr. Teplin, go to his website, Dr. David Teplin, T-E-P-L-I-N. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Dr. David Teplin and talking about ADHD treatment gone right. The genesis of this show really came about as a lot of work we've done together in helping some people and kind of expanding it out. And Dr. Teplin, I want to kind of share just some fun things. Just these are 3 situations that were very similar. And these are people that had called somebody like yourself, a psychologist, in one situation, a psychiatrist, and looking for some help, and this person hadn't seen them, but they referred them to me to begin to work with their ADHD from a coaching side. And as I began to work with them, I began something's just not presenting here. There was one woman in particular that I worked with who just really had a difficulty with memory. And I remember one day her coming in and saying she'd seen a picture of her kids in bunk beds when they were younger, and she couldn't recall ever having bunk beds. And I was having this conversation. I said, you know, have you talked to your mental health professional about that? And she said, no. I said, so let's spend some time and just talk about what's kind of going on. And she got out a piece of paper and a pencil and kind of wrote it out. I was very proud of this because she ended up going to our mental health professional that had actually another one that had referred her. And she went in and she actually got a diagnosis that was completely different from ADHD. In other words, it was a misdiagnosis, which was great because if you're paying attention to the wrong thing, you're going to get the wrong outcome. And then even you and I had a situation where you had referred somebody and I was listening and I'm like, there is an emotional thing that's kind of going on here, or a focus or self-regulation that's with some difficulty. And I began to language that back. And this is another situation where I said,
maybe you should go talk to somebody. And we had an adjustment in diagnosis, which really changed everything from both my perspective and their perspective. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that comes up routinely, and there are a few things I want to kind of highlight. One is lots of things can look like and mimic ADHD, but are not ADHD.
Yep.
And conversely, a person can have ADHD, but they can often have things going on at the same time. And what we know from the literature and also working in the clinical trenches that it, amongst adults who have ADHD, there's a 75 to 80% chance if they've got ADHD, they've got other coexisting conditions going on. Those
mm-hmm.
conditions can include a form of anxiety, a form of depression, personality disorders, sleep disorders, eating disorders, alcohol and drug issues, gambling issues, binge eating issues, sexual acting out, overspending, overeating, you know, all of those kind of things that can and do coexist with ADHD. So in many ways, making a diagnosis of adult ADHD is a lot more tricky and complex
mm-hmm.
for all of those kinds of reasons. And also so many things can look very similar that one has to take the time to really, you know, tease it out. And the one example that I think you referred to that you and I worked on,
yep.
that was a good example where, unfortunately, the person who was being worked up didn't have the opportunity first time round, and maybe even second time round. I can't remember the exact stuff, but I do recall that, you know, had they looked at certain things and teased it out, and I'm not, you know, certainly not trying to be a
yep.
Monday morning quarterback. I mean, I understand this is what it is, but that's the whole point of these kind of assessments, that they need to be more comprehensive, because
yep.
just doing a quick and dirty checklist in your doctor's office or over the internet or something like that, while it might be a nice starting point, it often doesn't necessarily
yep.
lend itself to the end point or the end result.
Yep. And sometimes, have you worked, you and I haven't delved in this area, but have you had the opportunity to diagnose somebody who had ADHD and bipolar at the same time?
Yeah, I do. And it's very interesting because, you know, when you read it in the clinical literature, depending on the study that you read, it can be anywhere from, you know, 20 to 30% of those with ADHD, you know, have some form of bipolar spectrum disorder. The tricky thing, though, is to sort out the difference between bipolar and ADHD, because there's a lot of overlap in the symptoms, which I won't get into too much now. But the difference is that bipolar disorder and bipolar spectrum disorders by nature and by definition
yep.
are episodic. So they come and go, versus ADHD, as you know, that's running in the background. But there certainly is loading in families, both genetically and then in terms of what we call comorbidity or coexisting, where bipolar or forms of bipolar and ADHD go together. But again, one has to be very open to trying to sort out the differences, because potentially a person can get misdiagnosed with either ADHD and or bipolar, when in fact it's one or the other, and sometimes it's actually both.
It's, you know, it's fascinating, because this is somebody that I didn't necessarily coach, but I've interviewed Dr. Roberto Olivardia on ADHD and bipolar, and it's been fascinating to me to learn about some of that stuff. And from him, I understand that ADHD often presents itself younger, and bipolar sometimes takes just like a trigger kind of later in life. And I literally had somebody who called me after I interviewed him about a month later, and I was having a conversation. They were older in life, and they were describing their problem. And I was like, something's just not sounding right here in terms of ADHD. And I said, I'm not so sure I'm comfortable working with you, because you're describing, you tell me you have ADHD and you tell me your challenges. And there's just, I'm not so sure it really, have you talked to a mental health professional about it? And the person said, well, really not in detail. And I encouraged them to do that. And I got a subsequent email. I didn't get the details of it, but it did sound like there was something kind of else at play. And again, I want to just reinforce that the nice thing about working together in these treatment teams, as I've described, is my job as a coach is really to kind of help educate the person over a period of time, and to work back and forth so that we can get the right person, the right stuff, the right diagnosis at the right time and moving forward, which is really, really, because we're all about paying attention to attention. And if you're treating the bacterial infection and you've got virus, you're not really treating the right thing and you're not going to get the outcome, or really probably the better scenario is vice versa. If you're treating a virus and you've got a bacteria, then you could get a better outcome. And I think that's really the key.
Well, I think you're right. And I certainly would also echo your previous guest. He talked about bipolar. That, I mean, you know, one of the differences is that, of course, ADHD is a lifespan disorder. And so, yes, it starts much earlier relative to bipolar disorder, which oftentimes only gets picked up in the late teens, early 20s, somewhere around there. But certainly in terms of a treatment team approach, I think you're absolutely right. I think they can and should go hand in hand. I think sometimes there's also a hard sell, not just for financial reasons, but for other reasons as well, where a person sometimes feels overwhelmed that there's too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak.
Yep.
And so one has to also be aware of, you know, who the person is and,
yes,
and what their comfort level is. Because, you know, for example, when I'm seeing somebody and I'm explaining treatment options, I explain to them from the get-go that when it comes to ADHD and treatment, you know, that there's things that they need to consider. And
mm-hmm.
what they always need to consider off the bat is they need to consider the options. And the options aren't the same for everybody. And so, you know, in a standard way, I say, look, treatment may include psychoeducation, medication, psychotherapy in its various forms, ADHD coaching, ADHD mutual support groups, or a combination thereof, meaning, hey, what makes sense for you? What's going to
yep.
fit for you? And it's not a one-size-fits-all. You can start off with A and expand to B and C. Along the way, you can try D. You can come back to A or B.
Yep.
Because in many ways, if you think about it, ADHD is a lifespan disorder. And so
yep.
it's not one of these things that you come in, you do the treatment, and away you go. Because lots of things come up in anybody's life along the way, which may be more pronounced at that point in their lives than previously.
Yep.
And we all have that, whether the person has ADHD or any condition or no condition at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to go to another break. When we come back, I want to come back and talk about I get calls sometimes by people who want coaching, and often I'm not so sure coaching is really the right thing for them. And I know when you're talking to some people, a lot of times there's people that you think this person would be good for coaching, and I'm sure there's some other areas, like maybe not that, maybe some other places. So when we come back, I want to spend a little bit of time on that. So real quickly, before we go, to learn more about David, drdavidteplin.com. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation with Dr. David Teplin. Really, the conversation in its biggest piece are treatment teams and different professions really working together and communicating for the benefit of those we work with. And before the break, I was kind of talking about this. You know, Dr. Teplin, I get calls from people sometimes, and they're looking for an ADHD coach. And quite frankly, sometimes I find that a tutor sometimes is really more along the lines of what they need. And I will say that on my end, often, particularly for some individuals with ADHD that maybe the IQ is a little bit lower, I find that some of those base type stuff really work better first, and then over long term, maybe they kind of come back to coaching. So I'm not the right solution for everybody. And I know you and I have talked that you see some people, some you don't refer to me and some that you do. Can you just kind of talk about that and what you, you know, what are you looking for? What works? How you refer? How do you get them connected with the right people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it depends on a lot of things. Certainly for the college slash university crowd, sometimes it's hard to discern whether they need more tutoring, coaching, or both. But if we take it outside of the academic setting and take a look at, you know, adults with ADHD outside of that, I think there are a lot of things to consider. So for myself as a clinician, when I'm considering whether to send somebody to somebody like yourself as an ADHD coach, I'm always need to be very aware of what the clinical presentation is, how much comorbidity or coexisting diagnoses are there, how stable is the patient at that point in time, what's more pressing, what isn't. So, for example, if I'm seeing somebody who's got ADHD and they've got an active substance use problem going on, first and foremost, at least initially, you want to get them stabilized with respect to the substance. And even ADHD treatment takes a bit of a backseat in some ways, at least initially, till one can become more stabilized. And so in those kind of cases, coaching, yes, potentially down the road, but not necessarily now, not necessarily front and center.
Yes.
And also sometimes the nature of the person's presentation is such where they really do need at some point and maybe more at the front end, you know, psychotherapeutic and more hardcore clinical kinds of interventions. Of course, it's always a case-by-case basis because there's lots of folks who don't have that presentation at all and can and do benefit, you know, quite nicely with having an ADHD coach. Sometimes the trickier part, Jeff, can be that the patient themselves are not sure. They tend to be more sure about whether they want to go on medication or not. What they're not always clear about is, should I get coaching? Should I get ADHD-related psychotherapy, which generally and oftentimes is cognitive behavioral therapy or forms of that? And so sometimes that's a more tricky thing in terms of, you know, where is the patient at and what do they need? And I'm a firm believer in, you know, obviously educating folks and letting them know what's available to them, but for them to make decisions that are going to be most comfortable for them, and also to be able to say, hey, you know what, I thought coaching was a must now, but actually I come to see that I'm not ready for coaching, or you know what, coaching is a great idea, and if I need anything other than coaching, I'll let you know kind of thing. So I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all, and I think it's a case-by-case basis, but I also think that clinical presentation and what's needed in the immediate, because certain things are more pressing, that that needs to kind of, in some ways, influence and dictate how treatment goes.
There's a lot of stuff. You said some great stuff there, and I want to kind of pull a few things out. One is medications. You know, I think that you said it. One of my big deals is when it comes to medications, you know, some people will kind of come in and they'll say, you know, they're horrible type things. And I'm like, I don't care if you take them or you don't. But one of my jobs is to talk to you about the side effects of taking them and also the side effects of not. You and I have done an interview years ago, how if somebody comes in with ADHD, you automatically screen them for substance abuse. And if they come in for substance abuse, you screen them from ADHD.
Right.
Because if you take a look at the statistics, you talk about divorces and lost jobs and productivity and failed marriages and accidents and da, da, da. And there's a long-term cost, if you will, of not taking medications. Of course, there's possibly costs of taking it. And I like to do a lot of educating them so they make an informed decision.
I just want to say, Jeff, that you know, one of the things that I always emphasize after doing a diagnostic workup on somebody and then sitting down and giving them feedback, my spiel doesn't change. And I always say to them, before you enter or consider any form of treatment, get as much education as you can about what ADHD is or isn't, how this all goes, the forms of treatment available, whether medication related or not, so that at least you're making more educated, informed decisions. Because also, as you know, we live in a world now where, first off, with the internet and other things, patients are much more aware and much more educated, which I think is a good thing. because I much prefer when patients kind of, it doesn't mean that because they come in with education that we as clinicians or professionals need to be threatened by what they're saying. In fact, if anything, in some ways it's a bit of a blessing that they've done some reading, they've asking some questions, and that they have, you know, some semblance and oftentimes a lot of good knowledge and understanding of how things go. But I really think it's important that folks get a good understanding as to what's out there, because it really isn't one size fits all for anybody.
Oh, God. You know, Dr. Teplin, back in the DSM-4 days, we did a show many years ago. A colleague, a peer of mine, Dan Pruitt, back in the DSM-4, there was three different kinds of ADD. There was inattentive, combined, and hyperactive, and you had a different number of symptoms that had to be present out of a certain number. And he actually did the math, and there was over 18,000 different combinations of symptoms that could get you a diagnosis of ADHD, and that doesn't take into consideration the severity or comorbid conditions. And the show was a lot of fun because we were just kind of playing around. So, okay, which version do you have? Well, I got 13,557. And it was a tongue-in-cheek type thing because it is so different. So it's great to get that education, but I know on my side we try to help everybody understand their own individual version. I was going to change the topic, but go ahead and finish what you're going to say.
I was just going to say that, and that actually stands for any of the conditions that we deal with clinically, because whether you've got depression, anxiety, substance use disorders, personality disorders, whatever it is, there's so many combinations and variations as to what the presentation can look like that often the old adage is true, which is if you've met one person with ADHD, you've met one person with ADHD.
Yes, it's so true. And you know something, I learned something years ago interviewing a Japanese psychologist. He says, you know, the thing about labels is once you label something, you quit paying attention to it. And I say that just everybody out there, I'm going to say the word red, and it conjures up in your mind like a red that's there. But, you know, there's an infinite number of shades of red. But
absolutely,
when I say the word red, you only think of one red. And so we need the label of red because from a communication perspective, nobody knows what we're talking about. So it's kind of like a love-hate thing. We need the label to identify it. But the problem with it is when we label it, we no longer pay attention to it. And the same thing happens with ADHD. One other thing that I wanted to bring up, and I've worked with – you and I haven't talked about this specifically, but I do have some other mental health professionals that are. And when it comes to coaching, I like to describe there's – people will come to coaching for two reasons. One, to relieve the pressure, to literally just get everybody off their back. And this is very common with college students and adolescents. If you ask them, do you want coaching, they say yes. But really, they show up and they're saying, Mom and Dad, see, I called my coach today. They're not really engaged with me. They don't really get the coaching paradigm. They're not really doing the work. They're just going so that Mom and Dad are no longer pestering them. And I think that's important because in my world, is if they're not showing up, if they're just expecting me to do something, it really doesn't necessarily work. And I've had other mental health professionals that have screened them because, as I describe, name a professional athlete that doesn't have a coach. It's hard to find those. And my job is really to help people actually achieve what they're capable of, just like any other coach does with any other athlete. But the person's got to kind of put in the work. And I say that this is key because many mental health professionals that I work with, I've had this discussion, and they kind of ferret through that stuff a little bit. And sometimes they'll weed some stuff out and say, you're not really the right one for coaching. And here's why I think this is important, Dr. Teplin, is that those with ADHD, when they go out there, often I find, particularly for like college students, there's been a long line of person after person after person that's been paraded, whether it's a mental health professional or a therapist or a tutor or whatever. And at some point in time, if it hasn't worked, I just become another person in that line that kind of proves it. And that communication of kind of whittling that down and understanding what resources are there, I think is very beneficial. So I'm interested in your comment on that.
Well, there are a few things. I think regardless of whether you're a coach or a psychologist or anything else, you have to understand the developmental perspective. So a teenager or a young adult is going through a phase where adults and adult so-called authority is seen in a particular way. And I don't know about you, but when I was 16, 17, or even 21, 22, I probably would have had a hard time if somebody said to me, hey, go see somebody for XYZ. So developmentally, I think that's important. I also think it's important to note that regardless of whether it's ADHD or not, as human beings and regardless of diagnosis, some people are more insightful, some people have more awareness, and some people have less so. So sometimes it's not that the person is being difficult, it's that you're asking them to buy into something that they don't fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the younger crowd, they'll sometimes say to me, you know what, Doc, I was diagnosed in grade 3 or grade 4. My parents weren't that keen necessarily on me going on medication, and here I am 25 years old, and it sounds like and feels like this never went away. And I say, well, what's your understanding of ADHD? And they say, nothing. I was told I had ADHD. I wasn't even part of the feedback interview when they spoke to my parents. And
mm-hmm.
It's almost like a mystery as to what it is
yep.
and what it isn't. And let's face it, a lot of folks, unfortunately, while the internet can be a real blessing, there's
yep.
a lot of doo-doo on the internet too, which is false and full of myths. And a lot of the time where people get the information from, whether it's the internet or their peer group, it's not always accurate. And so I always say, you know, it depends on where they're at developmentally. It depends on where they're at in terms of insight and awareness for themselves. And also where they're at, because it's not that uncommon that, yeah, we do certain things to get this one off our back and that one off our back, but we're not necessarily committed. You're right. The way you put it, I think, makes sense. That they just go through the motions. But I think,
yep.
again, on a case-by-case basis, we need to ask the question of, hey, do you really want to be here? Like I ask most of my patients that are under age 25, and I only deal with adults, so really it's 18 to 25 crowd. I ask them off the bat, are you here for you, or are you here to get your parents or your girlfriend or boyfriend or your teacher or professor off your back? And then we can start.
Yep. That's you just added that to my repertoire, Dr. Zeppelin. I'll be asking that every time I do that because it's a great question. So I need to kind of pull this thing together. One of the things that I just think that Dr. Zeppelin, I appreciate you coming on the show. And if you're listening to this, what I hope that you're getting from this is you heard some stories about how when we're working together in a treatment team, we can do so much more for those that we're working with, because we all have a different role. We all have a different job. And when we're communicating, like the coaches and the tutors and the mental health professionals and the psychiatrists and that kind of stuff, and we're working all together, we can really help accelerate and help improve outcomes. And if you're a mental health professional listening to this, or your doctor, you know, get them in touch. Get these people kind of talking and talk about your treatment team, because, again, in our experience, we've had a lot better outcomes working with the people just because we kind of communicated and kind of shared notes. So I want to wrap things up, but before I do, any final comments, nuggets, or words of wisdom?
No, I would certainly echo your words that the circle of treatment is very important. And I think as well for folks listening, what's really important at the end of the day is what makes most sense for the patient, what makes most sense for the person. And in most instances, you know, as the old expression goes, two heads are better than one. And you're right, we're each getting a piece of the pie in a certain angle that we don't necessarily see. You know, we're not always privy to everything that goes on. So if we're each getting a perspective and we put it together, I think that generally can only be for the benefit rather than the detriment to the patient.
Very well said. Everybody, if you want to learn more about Dr. Teppelin, go to drdavidteplin.com. And if by chance you want to learn anything about me, go to digcoaching.com. And with that, David, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure, Jeff.
Absolutely. Everybody, we hope you've enjoyed us. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.